Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Receiving this message.
We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 070.JE0705, certificate number 21125. Article the First.
Hey, do you know about the USA? Do you know about the government? Can you tell me about the Constitution? Hey, learn about the USA.
Are you... can you describe to the futurelings the process, just very briefly, the process of amending the U.S. Constitution?
Oh, wow. There's two different ways to do this. Am I right? You can do it with state conventions, which is almost never done.
Hmm.
And I feel like I've heard this suggested as a way to get around the liberal courts or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Those damn liberal courts.
Or is it a national convention? Can you do it with a national convention? Normally it's done with a series of state votes, right? Two-thirds of the states?
Three-fourths.
Three-quarters of the states need to pass off on an amendment to the Constitution. And what would that be? 12 and a quarter states have to just come kicking and screaming?
Oh, yeah. They just have to suck it.
They have to suck it
But,
up.
You know, first it has to pass both houses of the Congress.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So an amendment to the Constitution has to make it through the House and the Senate and then be ratified by three-quarters of the states. So it's a difficult process, like a laborious one. And it's intentional that it be difficult. Such that the Constitution not be constantly buffeted by the winds of popular fashion.
Oh, here's the one I was thinking of. As an alternative to having the two-thirds majority vote in both houses of Congress, two-thirds of the state legislatures can call for a constitutional convention and bypass Congress altogether. That doesn't happen that often.
Does not happen.
It has, in fact, never happened. Wouldn't that be fun? A constitutional convention?
I would thrill to a constitutional convention, but I don't think we can get the states to agree on that much. You know, we're in a time right now where it seems unlikely that we could pass a constitutional amendment about almost any topic because it would require, I mean, it requires the three-fourths of the states and both houses of the Congress agree that a thing needs to happen. And that seems very unlikely.
That's ambitious.
There are, however... a few outstanding amendments to the Constitution.
I think they're all outstanding.
Well, that's,
well, maybe not the one that got repealed by the other one.
You're talking about the 18th and the 21st. Neither one of those. Well, they do stand out if they're not outstanding. But there have been 27 amendments to the Constitution. And the early ones, the first ones that we know of are, or the that we know of, the first ones, the
of
ones
which that, we have record,
the ones that we think about as being the first are the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. We talk about them all the time.
Hey, since we're in a now a 28-year gap, I think, since the 27th Amendment has passed, and you've mentioned that it's difficult to amend the Constitution.
Yeah.
Is 28 years a record? I just realized I don't know this. What's the longest gap?
No, I don't.
Oh, no, between
I don't
the
think it is.
12th and the 13th. Yeah. Nothing after, you know, the 12th Amendment is what makes sure the vice president is not just the runner-up.
Uh-huh.
That's what keeps Michael Dukakis from being vice president. And there was nothing between that and the Civil War, the post-Civil War amendments. Abolishing slavery, defining citizenship, ensuring the right to vote. Those were all 60-odd years later. That's the longest gap.
There was an amendment proposed and not ratified during that period, what's called the Corwin Amendment, which on the eve of the Civil War, the Corwin Amendment, in attempting to keep the Southern states from seceding, proposed that it was basically a states' rights amendment that we could amend the Constitution and that would prohibit the federal government from...
Yeah, put slavery in the Constitution. Basically.
Yeah, that's right. Basically, like, you cannot interfere in the rights of states to administer themselves, including, specifically, you cannot outlaw states that legalized slavery.
It's actually in my book, Planet Funny, briefly, because Thomas Corwin, who is now only remembered for trying to get slavery in the Constitution, actually had some wise things to say about how politicians should not be funny, which were true at the time, but seem pretty out of date now.
Yeah. Now we really want our politicians to be funny.
We just crack up at the antics of the current guy with his long tie and his inability to go upstairs. It's a hoot.
What's interesting about the Corwin Amendment is that it did pass through both houses of Congress.
Oh, really?
But was only ratified by two states. Because
they couldn't even get the whole South.
Because at that point, the succession
movement is me moving to my TV to watch Succession on HBO. It's delightful.
I thought the succession movement was me going to the bathroom in the middle of Succession and not ever going back to it. But what happened there was, rather than the Southern states going to the trouble of ratifying this, they were already too committed to the idea that they were going to secede from the Union. So two states got around to it, and then the Civil War broke out. Corwin Amendment, just a little too late to get slavery enshrined.
It's probably a good thing it didn't.
It is. Can you think of any other amendments? Let me give you a hint. There are six amendments to the Constitution proposed that were never ratified.
Have they both passed two houses of Congress?
They all passed two houses of Congress and were submitted to the states.
So we're waiting on the states.
And were ratified by a portion of them, but not the necessary three quarters. Can you think of any?
I mean, the famous case here is the Equal Rights Amendment.
That's right.
I mean, it's famous to me because that kerfuffle was I like how you're marking stuff off like Alex Trebek.
I'm making a little check mark
there. I mean,
that was
a kerfuffle during our lifetime, and it's recently been revived. One or two state legislatures have passed the Equal Rights Amendment within the last year or so, mm-hmm. and it's led to questions about whether or not state approvals can expire. Like, can states unratify once they've ratified? Is there a time limit?
This has been considered by the courts a couple of different times, and the original ruling was a court back in the 20s said, well, you know, these amendments are these ones from ye olden times that weren't ratified; they're too old.
Yeah,
they've expired. But then a subsequent court said, well, wait a minute, there's nothing in any of these documents that suggests that there's an expiration date. And the court can't, the judiciary can't step in between Congress and the states and make rules that don't exist about legislation or about the Constitution. So unless an amendment has a time or has an expiration date baked into the proposal, the ruling from the courts is that amendments are...
They're just live.
They're live.
They're sitting out there.
That's right.
And someday, all it's going to take is North Dakota suddenly having a majority for the ERA, and suddenly it will be in the Constitution?
So this is how we have a 27th Amendment.
So I have considered the 27th Amendment as an omnibus subject because, am I wrong? It was a kid trying to show up his high school principal or something? Is that right?
There was a student by the name of Greg Watson in the early 80s. He was a student of government at UT Austin.
See some Alex P. Keaton type Reagan nerd?
Reagan nerd. He's not a Reagan nerd. He's gone on to work in legislative politics and has kind of, you know, made a pretty good career out of being a progressive,
like, other side of the aisle.
Yeah, huh. a guy working in the halls of power. But at the time, Greg was an undergraduate at UT, and he realized that there was an amendment proposed at the same time as the Bill of Rights that was still live. And it was an amendment that had to do with the pay, Congress's ability to grant a pay raise to itself.
Give itself a raise, yeah.
And it was important at the time. There was a lot of, in the original sort of constitutional convention, there was a lot of push and pull between Federalists and Anti-Federalists. And Anti-Federalists were very concerned, as they are today, with the federal government having too much power, with it not representing the people, with it not being a populist, you know, and having it baked into the Constitution that it was not a populist document, and the federal government would accrue to itself all these powers that would make it...
They didn't have to worry.
Dangerously unmanageable.
Luckily, we know that could never happen.
And good old James Madison... of Virginia, who was kind of one of the main architects of the Constitution, was trying to...
And the namesake of the mermaid in Splash.
Is that right? The mermaid's name was James Madison?
Yes, her name is James Madison.
I never saw Splash, so I guess I...
No, her name's Madison. She's named after the Avenue, which I assume in turn is named after James Madison and not messy Oscar Madison.
Wouldn't it be better if it was named after Oscar Madison?
Wouldn't it be better if Oscar Madison proposed a lot of amendments like Felix?
Maybe Oscar Madison is the namesake of Madison, the mermaid in Splash.
It could be.
She's pretty sloppy.
Is she?
Well, she eats raw fish, I'm presuming.
She doesn't know how to...
Blech. She never probably combed her hair.
She sloppily kisses Tom Hanks, I guess.
Hot. Maybe I should watch this
movie. It's on Disney Plus, but she's been pixelized.
Why? You could see her boobies?
Yeah, I think there is nudity. Oh. It's like an early Touchstone picture or something. It's kind of a Disney's first attempt at PG.
In that era when every comedy had to have one gratuitous scene where a woman took her top off?
You're like, hey, how can this be a comedy? It had Dan Aykroyd, but nobody took off her top.
Yeah, there's no like shower scene. The idea of Congress being a body that was... both represent, you know, it's the body that's supposed to represent the people. The Senate is the hoary institution where the moneyed class...
It's the House of Lords.
It's the House of Lords, right. And the House of Commons, our legislature, there was a lot of sort of bandying back and forth between sort of Federalists and Anti-Federalists about how to maintain the kind of people's house and how to... write that stuff into the Constitution and not have it just be conventional, because there was
conventional, like done at conventions.
Well, and yeah, and done by conventional wisdom.
Okay,
yeah, and that had they wanted the Anti-Federalists wanted this assurance. They wanted an assurance that the Constitution was modifiable and was going to be modified. And James Madison said, because it was necessary to ratify the Constitution itself, and we're talking about the original 13 colonies, when you think about it now, we are governed by all these documents that were ratified in a lot of cases by between 9 and 12 states, you know, right. But to ratify the Constitution, and ratifying the Constitution didn't all happen at once. When you think about the early days of the Union, it wasn't a thing where all 13 colonies rubber stamped the Constitution on day one.
There wasn't a big signing ceremony,
right?
Like the Declaration of Independence painting.
It was a process of getting states to sign on.
But it was what, when the ninth state or 10th, I guess, how would the math work?
So the original three states in 1787 that ratified the Constitution were Delaware first. The first state. The first state.
It still says on the license plates, I think.
Delaware, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey in December of 1789.
It's the only time Delaware is ever first, unless you're making a list of states that rhyme with smell-aware.
They are first in terms of incorporating...
that's right. Like, number of insurance companies.
Shipping companies. And then the fourth state in 1788 was Georgia. So now you're looking at a four-state country, Delaware, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Georgia have ratified the Constitution.
And do you remember we celebrated 1787 as the bicentennial of the Constitution in 1987?
Right.
And it was kind of a 1976 big deal, but they tried to make it a thing.
It was like, yeah.
But it was not actually the bicentennial of the ratification, right?
It was just the... You know, it was...
The writing of the document, I guess.
It was there, and it was, you know, it was live, right? It was ready to be ratified. Then next came, in 1788, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Maryland, South Carolina, New Hampshire, Virginia, and New York all ratified it in the space of that year. And it took, you know, it wasn't until July that New York ratified it, at which point we had 11 states that had ratified the Constitution.
And what was the cutoff? I don't want to do the math here.
The cutoff to what?
To three-quarters. Don't you need... Wasn't there a...
Oh, that was... I mean, of the 13 original colonies, you know, we had a...
10 out of 13 gets you to three-quarters.
Right. And we had 11 at New York. And then in... After New York ratified the Constitution... Madison proposed the first 12 amendments to the Constitution. And these were amendments there to appease anti-federalists and to demonstrate that the Constitution was a living document and could be amended even in its first couple of years. Like, let's get some amendments in there.
Interesting that some of these basic concepts like freedom of speech and freedom of the press were not in the original Constitution.
Yeah. And I think they weren't in the original Constitution because the founders kind of had a lot of presumptions about, as we've seen, a lot of the American form of government, as it's evolved, was based on the presumption that gentlemen shook hands over how things were done. And the Trump administration has really showed us how, to what degree our like enshrined sense of what our process is has been more or less...
Just a failure of imagination, right. Basically.
Just conventional sort of handshake deals. And I think the original founders believed that a lot of what became the Bill of Rights was stuff that was assumed and didn't need to be elucidated, but was elucidated by Madison specifically to salve the fears of people that said, if it's not in there, then it isn't guaranteed.
And I guess that specifically, there are amendments in the Bill of Rights that say, hey, if it's not here, these rights are held by the states. And,
right.
And if it's not there either, they're held by the people.
Right.
So that's expressly in the Bill of Rights, that this is not a complete list.
Right. That's right. And we reserve the right to, in this instance, amend the Constitution 27 times. So the Bill of Rights is 10 amendments, but there were 12 submitted.
Oh, cutting room floor.
And one of those was the amendment that dealt with Congress's ability to raise their own pay. And the amendment just stipulated that Congress could not amend their own pay in the term of the Congress that passed the law. Any pay raise that Congress gave itself would only take effect after the next election.
Right.
So you couldn't raise your own pay. You were raising pay for Congress and you could have lost your job. And what that meant was that Congress, if the Congress voted a big pay raise and the people of the union felt that they were that they were going to the trough, they could all be voted out.
Vote every single one out.
And so
I think it should be on a per congressperson basis. You should continue to get the old salary until you retire. It's not until your successor replaces you.
Oh, that's that a
he
nice
or she
idea.
Gets the he or she gets the new paycheck.
Well, cost of living increases were kind of were thought of in terms of this amendment. But in the ratification of those first amendments, it was not presented as the Bill of Rights was not presented as an amendment to the Constitution. Each one of the 12 articles
argued separately
were argued separately and ratified separately. Hmm. And so of the 12, the second of the of and we think of the Second Amendment as being the right to bear arms, and we hear that talked about all the time, the Second Amendment to the Constitution. But in fact, the right to keep and bear arms was the fourth proposed article.
The pay raise one was top two?
The pay raise was two.
That was top of mind ahead of freedom of speech.
Ahead of freedom of speech and the right to bear arms, it was how is Congress going to conduct itself? How is Congress going to what are the rules that are how do we codify exactly how the legislature is going to grow and be compensated? Because the Senate is pretty simple. Each state gets two. And each state gets two, and the presumption is that the senators are going to be from the moneyed class. And partly it is that because there are only two senators, they're elected statewide, they need to be famous men. People in far-off Virginia have to know them as well as people in Richmond. And so it's kind of the concept of a senator.
It's not your local guy, like your congressman is,
and they
like your representative.
They don't need to be in touch with the Conestoga wagon concerns of folks on the at the edge of or on the frontier of their own state. They need to be concerned with the overall well-being of their state. But the legislature is districted, and legislators are apportioned, right? Each one represents a certain number of citizens. And so they, and the premise is that representation be small enough that not only is the congressperson supposed to understand the local concerns, but also that the congressperson would be a literally man of the people. In that they would not be of high station. The founders really wanted there to be a middle class.
You want more less elite congressional representatives, as opposed to the fewer you have, the more they have to be, the more likely they are to be
elites
in some sense.
Right. And so, this was a big anti-federalist concern, was that that the legislature be people of, you know, of middle class station, and that was part of the checks and balances.
Before we get into all this apportionment stuff,
yeah,
do we need to get back to Greg Watson?
So Greg Watson, so the pay the ability of Congress to pay itself or to alter its pay did not achieve the ratification numbers in the states that it needed. And this was a time
do we know why? Is it controversial? Or did states just, was it just a matter of business that never got taken up due to other stuff, so, like the Corwin Amendment?
So what happened is the Bill of Rights and all the, and this first group of 12 amendments was presented by Madison in September of 1789, at which point only 11 states had ratified the Constitution. Uh-huh. And so the number of states required to ratify the amendments was 7, right?
Three quarters of 11, not of 13.
Right, three quarters of 11.
Got it.
Which meant that if the states had all immediately ratified the Bill of Rights, all 12 of them would have been ratified, you know, in late 1789. But in November of 1789, North Carolina ratified the Constitution and was now in the Union, but also changed the math on how many states it required to ratify an amendment. And then Rhode Island joined the Union in May of 90. And with each subsequent state, even if you got up to the number of states necessary to ratify it based on the number when it was proposed, the
previous math,
each new state changed the math and added another state necessary to ratify it. And at a certain point, Congress's ability to pay itself started to be decided by statute, right? States couldn't get their acts together because in order to ratify an amendment or to ratify the Constitution itself, state houses, both the high house and low house of a state, had to pass the ratification. And you often had a problem where the lower house would pass it and the state Senate would harumph over it. And states were at the time, the Senate would rewrite the amendment and send it back and say like, well, we changed thus to this or whatever. And it would, you know, it threw the whole thing into disarray. Our guy, Greg Watson, realized that this congressional pay amendment was still a live amendment, and he wrote a paper about it for his government class. The paper was read by a teaching assistant and given a C because the teaching assistant was like, that's not what it says. This is just a stunt, like boo. And Watson took the paper to the professor, a woman by the name of Sharon Waite, and appealed it like, hey, you know, this is, I think this is pretty well backed up.
He's a grade grubber.
And his teacher, the professor, Ms. Waite, said, no, I agree with the teaching assistant. Like, this is a C paper. And Greg Watson got a B in his bonnet.
He got a C in his bonnet.
He got a C in his bonnet.
He wanted a B in his bonnet.
He wanted at least a B in his bonnet. And it was during a period where there had been a few national kerfluffles about Congress raising their own pay.
Yeah, I remember this.
In the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, Congress gave themselves a few pay raises, and it was, it was a big editorial page topic for a few years.
Those like, fat cats in Washington.
How dare they? Hurrah, rah, rah. And so Watson started a letter-writing campaign where he just started sending letters to all the states, saying, hey, you know, nine states ratified this or whatever back in 1790. If your state ratifies it, you know, we'll be on our way. And to his great surprise, the state of Maine said, hey, not a bad idea. And the state Congress, the House and Senate, ratified.
The legislature took it up and passed it.
And all of a sudden, Watson's got this head of steam. And so
he's got to get to 38, right?
38 states at the time, yeah. And so he just starts cranking out these letters, and it was kind of a fashionable thing to do for states to say, you know what, we're going to rein in the U.S. Congress. This is a great, you know, it was no cost to us,
right?
Right? It gives the states a chance to take up arms against the Congress, and also harken back to this amendment that never happened.
This is something that maybe the future, and maybe even other countries in our time, won't understand, that Congress, our elected representatives in our government, is always incredibly unpopular.
Yeah.
Congressional approval numbers, even when Congress is doing just fine, are always something like 28% or something.
We elect these people to go to Congress or go to Washington and represent us.
And we immediately hate them. Like, until they're in Congress, they have great numbers. And then we send them and it's like 39% approval. Like, mosquitoes have better approval ratings than Congress.
And this was a great opportunity for state houses to take on the national house.
I voted for this thing that protects your interest against those clowns in the Beltway.
Right. And as Watson started to investigate his amendment, he realized that in 1873, Ohio had actually ratified.
Nobody noticed
because Ohio was making some statement about congressional pork belly stuff, and they ratified this amendment, what would have been the second article of the future Bill of Rights. And then in 1978, just a few years before, Wyoming had done the same thing. Wyoming had ratified it as a, you know, to send a message to Washington, a message that no one heard or cared about. In the process of it, he got his 38th state with Michigan in 1992, and the amendment, which would have been the Second Amendment, became the 27th Amendment. And it was only after the fact that it was discovered that Kentucky had in fact ratified it in 1792 and forgot. The whole state forgot they'd ratified it. Nobody wrote it down?
Well, it's 200 years earlier. You know, anybody who would have remembered, not around anymore.
But somehow you would think there would have been a piece of paper like tucked into a book somewhere.
I think the thing is that paper is so voluminous, right? When you look at the minutes of state legislatures and the dorky things they do every day.
Yeah.
And the complete listing of the proceedings, it's just too bulky.
Really hard to remember every amendment to the Constitution your state has ratified.
Did it? It's true. You should remember those before the argument's over, a day to honor the new species of pine tree or whatever.
But, you know, Kentucky ratified it a second time.
Oh, they ratified it twice. As part of Greg's campaign?
As a part of Greg's campaign.
Did this happen in time for him to get his grade changed?
So later on, many years later, in fact, a reporter investigating this whole story realized that Greg still had a C on that paper. And
does he need to get 38 states to change the grade?
The reporter contacted Professor Waite, who had left academia and become like a bee farmer or something, and said, hey, this is an injustice. And she submitted a change of grade form to the University of Texas and wanted the grade change to A+. University of Texas said that that A is the highest grade at University of Texas. There is no A+.
Grade inflation again.
But they were under considerable pressure. And so the only A+ grade ever awarded in the University of Texas system went retroactively to Greg Watson's 1982
and
paper.
Rightly so. Yeah. It's not like anybody else's work got a congressional amendment passed.
Think about that. I mean,
that only happens on average once every 5 or 10 years in American history.
That's right. That's right. Oh, well, a lot less frequently than that if you go the whole 10 years, given that there have been 27
amendments over 200 years.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
So while you were asking about other amendments, thinking back to this time frame, I don't know if any of these passed either House of Congress, but there was in the 80s a brief flurry of excitement over flag desecration. And when even the conservative justices on the Supreme Court ruled that flag desecration was protected by the First Amendment, an amendment turned out to be the only remedy. And I don't know how far it got.
It never passed both houses of Congress. The amendments that
It must have passed Newt's House or something, right?
Yeah, but didn't make
never
it through the
Senate. Yeah,
the ones that have the six amendments.
Is there a balanced budget?
No,
that's also
nope,
for
that
my
was
lifetime.
Also that was also one that they
an abortive attempt in my lifetime.
Yeah,
are these all old timey?
No, the most recent one, in fact, is the Washington D.C. Voting Rights Amendment, and now we're talking about Washington D.C. being admitted as a state, which is the other alternative.
Not so,
but. For a long time, because within the Constitution, it's mandated that there be a capital city of the United States that is not within a state.
Because it was thought that it would advantage a particular state if the too much prestige if the capital is there.
So for Washington, D.C. to be made a state, there still needs to be a federal campus within Washington, D.C. that is excluded from the city.
Is that what the current statehood plan would involve? Like just making the mall a district with no residents?
That's right. From the White House to the Congress and, you know, there on Pennsylvania Avenue, that would still be a capital city excluded from the new state of Washington, D.C. or the new state of Columbia or whatever it would be called.
I guess I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, because you could.
What if you're a homeless person living on the mall and your address is in there? You still can't vote.
You can't vote.
No representation, buddy.
If you live in the FBI building, you won't be able to vote.
If you've been living in the basement of the Smithsonian for decades.
The other amendments, so ERA, you're right, was ratified by a lot of states, but not enough, and is still live.
We should do the ERA because people misremember how that happened.
Yeah.
It was part of the Republican platform in 72, I think before Phyllis Schlafly managed to
flip it around.
Schlafly? Schlafly.
Schlafly, I say.
Schlafly.
Schlafly. The ERA has been on my list since the very beginning. And then I think I did Anita Bryant and
you thought you'd done enough for the cause?
No, I feel like I need to weasel my way back to the ERA. But actually there was an amendment to the Constitution proposed that outlawed child labor.
Oh, interesting.
And in the process of trying to get it passed, enough laws were passed that like sort of obviated the need for there to be a congressional amendment. We've talked about the slavery amendment, Corwin. But there was one before that, which was an amendment that stipulated, and this was during the War of 1812, that if you accepted a title from any European nation, if you were knighted by the Queen, you would immediately lose your American citizenship. That has become a kind of, there's again, a sort of gentleman's agreement that Americans do not accept titles from European powers. But it was an amendment that didn't, that passed both houses of the Congress, but did not get ratified by all the states.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The Queen still gives honorary knighthoods to Americans, right?
So Americans can hold honorary knighthoods granted by the Queen, but they, because they're not citizens of the Commonwealth, they aren't knights in the sense that they can be called sir or dame.
Oh, I'm looking. Sir Steven Spielberg. He's yep. not. He's Steven Spielberg, KBE.
Bill Gates.
Dame Angelina KBE. Jolie.
Yeah.
This amendment would have changed a lot of lives, right?
That's right.
Angelina Jolie would have had to renounce her citizenship even as an honorary dame.
That's right. And the thing is, all of these people, Bill Gates, Bill Clinton, Angelina Jolie, like I would
Ralph
send them
Ralph Lauren,
all.
Weirdly?
I'd send them all across the pond. I think America.
Ralph Lauren's most, like he's 51% British anyway, right?
Huh. I mean, he.
In terms of
his style?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's 100% British in terms of his style. We'll talk about that in my next episode of The Omnibus.
Ooh.
Yeah.
We don't usually get a teaser.
A week from today. But the first article.
Right, because this 27th Amendment was actually Article the Second.
Right. And the 27th Amendment would have been the Second Amendment if it had been ratified in its time.
So this has to be something even more important than the two most pressing issues, which were in order: congressional pay raises and freedom of expression.
That's right.
Okay.
The first article proposed by Madison when he submitted the original 12 amendments, which the 10
carved the Bill of Rights.
That's right. The 10 of the Bill of Rights were actually 8 through 12.
This is so exciting.
Sorry, 2nd through 12.
This would have been the first thing, top of mind for
top
James
mind.
Madison.
The first article was an amendment that dealt with congressional apportionment.
Which means how you decide how many congressional districts there are?
It means how many people does any one congressman represent?
I see.
And it's a question both of how many, how proportionate a congressperson is to its population and how big Congress is. So at the time, there was a sense that Congress needed to be a certain size. The population of the original 9 states or whatever, there needed to be the ratio of citizens to congresspeople needed to be small enough that Congress itself, that the legislature, would be large enough to represent the diversity of the population. But in anticipating the growth of the population of the United States, there also needed to be some limit put on how I mean, if you set a hard and fast rule, say, for instance, that for there would be a congressperson for every 30,000 American citizens, right. As the population of America grew, so too would the population of the legislature until it became an unwieldy size.
And I'm looking at the original numbers here. In the 1790 census, there were about 4 million Americans. And the very first Congress, by the time North Carolina and Rhode Island got their seats, it looks like 59 members of the House of Representatives. So at the time, let me do the math. Oh, it's the devil's work. Each of these Congress people is representing 66,666 Americans.
Right.
By that ratio.
And this amendment,
too many to know. By the way, a man of the people
cannot know 66,666.
You will not know everyone people in your district, but there are enough that it's not just the two most famous person in your state.
But there was a feeling, a very strong feeling, that there should be that the lower house should have a larger number of representatives. That the ratio of representatives to citizens be a lot lower. In fact, George Washington,
because if it's bigger, it'll have more power, or
because it will keep it as a democratic institution rather than as an aristocratic one, but also that it truly be sort of representative and less.
If your state's a lot of farmers, it should be farmers,
right? That in fact, 66,666 people in a state that only had, a couple hundred thousand people, did effectively mean that you were a statewide representative.
Yeah.
George Washington, who never weighed in on these matters, who remained silent throughout his term on all this kind of congressional, hullabaloo, Federalist, Anti-Federalist, blah, 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 actually weighed in on this topic and said that he felt like every 30,000 people should have a representative in the Congress. He wanted that number to be relatively low so that Congress would be a large and diverse body of people.
Was anybody considering the math problem presented by the least populous state, the least you can give, it's the Wyoming problem today, the least populous state, the least you can give them is one. You can't put 0.3 of a person in the House.
Right.
So were they doing math based on, let me see, what's the least populous state in the first census? Delaware. Good job.
Yay.
Even smaller.
First in size.
if you start at the bottom, only 12,000 people, and by people I mean free white males,
right,
of voting age.
Right.
So it was
stipulated that no state could have fewer than one representatives in the House.
There's no vivisection in Article the First.
No. But the math was something that was, that was very complicated, and Madison had solutions. The various states offered different solutions.
At the time, the most populous state, it looks like, would have been Pennsylvania or Virginia with about 110,000. So roughly a ratio of 10 to 1 between the biggest and the smallest state.
Right.
Today, I guess I'm getting ahead of you, but what's the ratio of California to Wyoming? It's more than 10, let's just say. California has about 40 million people. Wyoming has
400,000?
Yeah, like 500,000. Yeah, so yeah. It really is closer to 1 in 100 than 1 in 10.
And that's, that's sort of the miracle of the U.S. system of government, right? The Wyoming has two senators, just like California does.
By miracle, do you mean incredibly incredible problem of representation at the moment?
So Article the First, this was considered in many ways by all parties the most important thing to adjudicate to get right out of the gate.
Because otherwise, how do you know even how many people are in your legislature?
That's right. This was the big issue. And the article basically laid it out that the legislature should have, the House should have no less than 100 congresspeople, nor less than one representative per 40,000 citizens. Until the legislature reaches 200 members, at which point there should be not more than one representative per 50,000 people.
Not okay. So that curbs the growth? Is that curbs the growth of the...
It sort of changes the curve.
Right. Out of maybe a recognition that the current ratio is maybe unsustainable as the country grows?
Yeah, as you get to...
Or the original ratio?
As you get to more and more people, you need to start to kind of, you know, to
make those districts,
round that
make
off
those districts
a little bit.
Bigger, yeah.
If that math were used, if this article had been ratified, for instance, we would currently have a legislature that had about 6,600 members.
Congress would have 6,600 people?
6,600 people. If that math were pursued without amendment and or without modification. And Madison foresaw that and had the idea of there being more, as the representation, or as more and more people got into the United States, there would be sort of a greater, the ratio would change.
You could gradually change the ratio.
6,600.
California would have almost 900 congresspeople.
One of the other considerations, of course, is that how big can a body grow before it no longer can effectively deliberate? And we see now that even our current Congress, which has 435 members, it's almost impossible for them to reach a consensus anymore. If you can imagine 600 and...
I'm not sure 6,000. Size is the defining factor,
yeah,
but it certainly would be if you had 10 or 15 times as many people.
Well, in terms of how, you know, if each congressperson has the right to get up and speak to the entire body.
Yeah, just parliamentarily, it's a nightmare, right?
Right.
That's not a word, by the way.
Parliamentarily.
Parliamentarianally, perhaps.
Anyway, this amendment, it was understood that it was important, and it was ratified in pretty short order by New Jersey, Maryland, North Carolina, South Carolina, New Hampshire, New York, Rhode Island, Pennsylvania. Like,
I lost track. What is that, nine?
We got to nine, not right away, because some of the states, like Delaware, didn't ratify it.
First
Georgia,
state my ass.
Massachusetts, Virginia. But after the addition of the states that came after those initial 11, North Carolina, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Kentucky, they each ratified it as they joined.
But it was still always just behind the number it needed.
Every time, right? It needed nine initially, and then North Carolina joined, and now it needed 10. But North Carolina ratified it. So we were just down by one.
Do we have any sense of why the states that didn't ratify? Was it just procedural, or did they have beefs with specific complaints about the proportionment?
It was often just that between the two houses, one of the houses ratified it and the other didn't. It ended up that Connecticut was the state that hung in the balance. And Connecticut, the lower house passed the law and sent it to the Senate. And the Senate, the Connecticut Senate, said, we shouldn't ratify this until after the next election. Because... You know, it's,
sure,
we're gonna punt this.
It'll redraw Congress.
But after the next election, the Senate passed it, but then the lower house rejected it. The freshman class of the new house.
They're just full of power. They realize they're the fulcrum of this.
That's right.
They're mad with power.
So it could have passed the Connecticut, the Connecticut Congress in November or October of 1789, But when it bounced back after the election in May of 1790, the lower house rejected it. And part of this was because when the amendment went through the U.S. House and Senate,
mm-hmm, originally,
the Senate rewrote it slightly and passed a slightly different version than the House had passed. And it was in that confusion that a lot of the states weren't sure whether, you know, weren't sure of the formula. And honestly, the formula would have created a problem, even not considering the 6,600 members of a current Congress. There would have been, when the population of the United States reached about 10 or 11 million, there would have been some, like, a math problem that would have rendered this a very, like, an untenable kind of
It would be formula. Unworkably large much sooner than,
right,
than anybody thought.
But after Kentucky ratified it, and Kentucky was the last state to ratify the amendment, and we still needed one more state. Kentucky was the, what was it, the 15th state, and we at that point needed 12 states to ratify it, and Connecticut never made it over the fence, and after Kentucky, no further state ever considered it.
It must have looked pretty dead.
It looked pretty dead.
If new states weren't thinking that way.
And what was happening was kind of like the child labor thing. They were introducing interim statutes to cover the bases that ended up just kind of covering the law, or, you know, like making the decision about how big the Congress was going to be. And that ad hoc procedure worked all the way until 1911, at which point the Congress was 433 legislators large. And there was, again, a recognition that
this is about all we can do.
And so they capped Congress at 433, but with the recognition that Arizona and New Mexico were about to join the Union. And so they gave each one a congressperson. And so 435 became the
number of Congress. So our current number is just a coincidence based on what happened to be the statutory size of Congress in around 1911.
They made the law, and they realized that they couldn't take a representative away from anybody.
They were out of offices in the whatever, not the Dirksen building, whatever the House office building is.
Yeah, what is the House office building? It's the, it's not the
the Gingrich building.
Yeah, it's, let's call it the Gingrich
building. The Rayburn building.
I think it is the, no, Rayburn is the Senate building. No, wait a minute. No, it's the House. Well, anyway, this is going to be embarrass us because
we don't care to
all those DC statehood people are going to be really yelling at us. It briefly was 437 when Alaska and Hawaii joined, but after the subsequent census, now the ratio between citizens and congresspeople is tied to the number rather than the other way around. So with each subsequent census,
you have a certain percentage of the population,
that's right,
allotted to you. A certain percentage of the population of the House allotted to you based on your population.
That's right. But technically, this amendment is still live.
But you'd need a lot of states if it only ever got up to, what did you say, 12?
Yeah, we had 11 states that ratified it.
So you need 27 more.
27 states to ratify.
Or 28 if DC gets statehood.
That's right. An interesting fact that I did not realize until I started researching this is that my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather,
okay,
five greats, great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, was actually in the first United States Congress.
Really?
He was in the first Congress,
what
and
state?
The second and third as a representative of Virginia. And I never knew that. I always thought that I knew that he was the governor of Virginia.
What's his name?
After
I still happen to have the first U.S. Congress page open.
His name is John Page.
There he is.
And
he looks like a roguish fellow.
He was very roguish. He grew up in a sort of famous house. He was Thomas Jefferson's college roommate. And I knew those things about him.
He was quoted in W's first inaugural.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
I guess he was friends with Jefferson and he wrote him a letter saying, "We know the race is not to the swift nor the battle to the strong." I think that's from the Bible. He didn't make that
right,
up.
No,
that "Do you not think an angel rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm?" So he had some kind of vaguely Jeffersonian sentiment that got into an inaugural address in our century, in our millennium.
So Page was the 13th governor of Virginia. He was in those first three Congresses, but he and Jefferson carried on a very long correspondence.
And love affair.
So there's a lot of, there's just a lot of material between them. The two wrote a bunch of, and he's a College of William and Mary graduate. But there are, his house was a plantation in Virginia called Rosewell, which is even still, the ruins of it still stand, and it's still a tourist attraction in Virginia.
Do aliens go there accidentally?
That's right. They're looking at their map and they're like, Rosewell.
Autocorrect.
But of all of the things that I thought I knew, it was reverse genealogy that as I was reading this, I was like, oh, this is fascinating. And I was, you know, as you do, reading the list of all the Congress members of the first U.S. Congress. And it said, what? I know that name.
First Congress is pretty good. It's like being in the Mercury 7.
Yeah.
Except you're all wearing knee breeches and you're walking 59 abreast in slow motion.
He didn't sign the Declaration of Independence. He wasn't there.
Because he didn't like it. I'm not signing this crap.
But yeah, his signature presumably is on the Bill of Rights.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah. Well,
I don't think you should be taking any credit.
It didn't pass down to me ultimately the question is, did I get any money out of it? Answer, no. Still no.
But maybe you have his roguish lift of the eyebrow or something.
You know,
you have a better hairline.
I'm grateful I don't have his hairline, that's right. But I would trade anything for his waistcoat.
It's pretty nice. And that concludes Article the First, Entry 070.JE0705, Certificate Number 21125, in the Omnibus. Now, future listeners, we were men of the people. I don't know how many listeners the Omnibus has. Tens of thousands of listeners.
Tens and tens.
So you and I each represent some five-digit number of Omnibus people.
That's right.
And I feel like that's enough that we should know your names. That's close to Madison's ratio.
I'm certainly, of the two of us, the man of the people.
And we've had a draft. We alternated and we chose which listeners we wanted.
That's right.
And we will announce who was last. It was, I was going to say Sparky, the guy that sends us the postcards. But no, he went in the first round.
Sparky's tough.
If you would like to make your voice heard, our offices are always open. You can reach us on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, what have you, at John Roderick or at Ken Jennings, or jointly at Omnibus Project. You can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com, and you will get a form reply from one of our staffers about whatever your dumb legislative idea is.
Thank you for your letter.
It'll talk like that. I am a musical robot. You can send us physical items through the U.S. mail in our time at whatever the address is. P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155. I have right here. I wish I could say which of our constituents sent us this, but I can't. It's
can you not?
Because they sent it directly from an Amazon used bookstore.
Oh.
And I don't know who it's an Amazon used bookstore in Richmond Hills, Texas, but I don't know who the sender was. It's a copy of The Hide and Seek Duck.
Huh.
A 1952 Wonder Book, which looks like a little Golden Books knockoff. And here's what I love on the back. It says, the Wonder Book slogan, our watchword, with washable covers.
Oh, that is important.
You got to have a book with a washable cover.
It gets all that applesauce on it.
You don't want kids peeing and spilling honey on the hide-and-seek duck.
Now, this may be somewhat related to a very old meme of mine where I described the search for meaning in life as finding one's duck, because I was admiring a bird dog discovering that what they were really about was a duck.
Yeah, I don't care. I don't care about any of this.
I mean, this was years ago. I have no idea. That's the only connection I have to a hide and seek duck.
I think you might be right, because the duck is being sought by the three cuddly kittens.
Right.
Susie, the big dog, and the little dog. That appears to be the cast of characters.
Everyone here seeks the duck.
So it is about duck finding, yes, this book.
And finding your duck is a way that I have used in the past to describe finding purpose in life.
And it has washable covers. Thank you, nameless contributor of that. And we also have a new postcard from our friend Mark, who brought his kind of beautiful trademark gradations of watercolor to bear on the Arctic with our Roald Amundsen's airship postcard. Isn't that lovely?
That is lovely.
Although he tells us he prefers Robert Falcon Scott because not because he died, but because his journal is so poetic, and Amundsen did not have that kind of poetry in his soul. Or maybe he would have if he'd been dying of deprivation.
Well, he's an artist, so of course he would say that. That's the thing about artists.
I prefer the guy who dies on the tundra.
Yeah, I prefer the guy who had a florid journal to the guy that succeeded.
Mark is a capital R romantic, but he really did he did capture the romance in a big airship going through the midnight sun.
As one of the two members of the legislature of Omnibus,
the junior member,
I believe that I speak for Mark when I say, huzzah.
I guess you're the senior member from the state of Washington.
That's right.
Because you're older than me.
That's right.
I'm still the junior Omnibus legislator.
You came from a different generation of Washingtonians. You know, I'm the kind of the old school.
You're a Dixie Lee Ray omnocrat. We also, what did I not do?
Dixie Lee Ray, by the way, is a former governor of the state of Washington and is no reference to Dixie.
No, we have decided to drop the name of the show, which was Dixie Omnibus for many years.
Why was the great old Confederate Omnibus.
Why was this show called Antebellum Dixie Omnibus : We Love the Confederacy? We decided to strip it down.
We were on our way to Georgia, and we got all swept up in the romanticism.
It's true. The show was born in Georgia. Yeah, so if you're listening to this after 2020, you will think the show was always called Omnibus. You won't be one of the original fans that used to love Dixie Antebellum Omnibus.
Old Antebellum Lost Cause Omnibus.
Or DAO for short. If you would like to contribute to the show now that we've lost our Confederate trappings, if you want to show your support for our newly woke title, you can do that on our Patreon, patreon.com/omnibus.
We've taken down all of the Confederate statuary.
This room used to have so many Confederate statues. And you've just relabeled them. You're pretending that's ZZ Top over there now.
Well, what was great was every time we came in, we got to like burn Atlanta anew. We just had to cross through a little scale model of Atlanta and burn it down.
We burned Atlanta last summer when we left our friends at Stuff Media.
Ouch.
Ouch. Sorry, Atlanta.
Sizzle.
And so, yeah, please donate generously if you'd like to support the show. What did I not do? The money. Oh, there's the Facebook Futurelings.
Right.
Congregate.
And Reddit, too.
The fan page. And there's a similar subreddit. There might even be a Discord.
I'm sure there is.
I don't even know what that is. You can probably get on a Microsoft Teams meeting with us. No,
that's right.
Pretty soon.
That's right. Just Zoom call with other Futurelings. Just Zoom, a Zoom, a Zoom, a Zoom.
Zoom, 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 Zoom.
Futurelings, from our vantage point in your distant past, at a time when Article the First has not been ratified, you must look back and think how ridiculous that they ever had a legislature with fewer than 6,500 people.
How did they get by without Article the First?
Yeah. What a bunch of dummies. It took a future college student by the name of Dylan Jennings to finally push that amendment all the way
through. Dylan is not a grade grubber. He'll just be like, oh yeah, I guess I have a C. It's because I didn't turn anything in, Mom. That's the extent to which he will go.
He looks up from his phone long enough to say that.
I think if Article the First ever actually passes, it should not be the 28th Amendment or whatever.
Oh.
It should be, we should stipulate it should be the Zeroth Amendment.
The Zeroth Amendment.
In computer science and other engineering fields, things are often indexed from zero, not one. Why not
Interesting.
The Constitution? It opens up the potential for an Article Zero of the Constitution.
I would like it to insert itself as the first article, just so the Second Amendment people have to change their name to the Third Amendment
Everything
people.
Has to move up.
And then there, and that's just going to be confusing.
But then you've got to change the cover of whatever that Jane's Addiction record is, Ritual de Loja Habitual.
Yeah.
It'll be this new Second Amendment.
I like
now.
The original cover of Ritual de la Habitualo.
You don't say it Ritual?
I don't. I say Ritual.
Ritual of the Habitual. Really big shoe, really big.
We hope and pray that all of these catastrophes that we fear may never come. At least in my case, hope and pray that the U.S. Constitution survives unamended by these scurrilous amendments. But I would like to see the ERA passed.
I think it's going to happen.
I'm not. How do you feel about D.C. statehood?
I'm pro-D.C. statehood, but only as a nakedly partisan maneuver. I don't care if those people can vote or not.
How do you feel about Puerto Rican statehood?
Also the same.
How do you feel about Jefferson statehood?
Kind of against it, because it turns out I just don't want to have like a quasi-white supremacist state.
Right.
That's my problem.
The thing is, with DC statehood, we get 51 states, which is divisible by 17.
Not a prime. You can have three rows of 17.
52, of course, is not a prime, but 53...
Jefferson's the problem. 53 is the next prime.
53 would make it a prime number of states. And but that very much appeals to me.
That's not it's not a problem as far as drawing the field of stars.
No.
You know, our current field of stars is not an even multiple. It's not 5 by 10.
No.
It's like what? 8, 7, 8, 7, 8, 7, 8 or something?
Right, right.
7, 6, 7, 6.
It's got a very appealing kind of shift of it's like one of those kind of eye teaser posters from the late 80s.
People are going to get mad. Yeah, it's a magic eye poster.
That's what I was looking
It's 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 6. 11 times 5 plus 11 times 4 plus a 6.
Isn't that beautiful?
Do you remember? I don't know if this how high this got, but it was. I don't know if this was just a stupid op-ed idea or if this was ever actually considered by either House of Congress. But do you remember the compromise that would give D.C. a voting representative in Congress while at the same time, because in our time, that's guaranteed to be a staunchly Democratic seat forever. The compromise would be that Mormon missionaries serving overseas would get a seat. Like Utah would get an additional congressional seat representing the thousands of Utah kids
really
currently overseas. So the idea is you could get it through Congress if there was if you threw a bone to an additional permo Republican seat too. And the way to do that would be Mormon missionaries.
If you look at a 51 star flag, it looks terrible. It is an ugly flag.
Well, they haven't pre-designed it.
Sure. Are you kidding me?
It's not by statute though. Like James Madison didn't draw this in 1789.
Well, no, but you don't think somebody out there has put every number of possible stars on an American flag?
The 51 suggestion I saw was circular. Have you seen it?
I didn't see a circular one. No, I just saw what was attempting a grid, but what's going on here?
9, 8, 9, 8, 9, 8. Yeah, that's how you got to do it.
That's ugly. But a 53 star flag is gorgeous.
I'm looking at it now.
That's an 8, 7. Wait a minute.
Oh,
8, 7, 8, 7, 8, 7, 8.
I saw a 51 star flag that kind of had a fireworks boom thing going off.
Oh.
And it was nice.
There's a 51 star flag.
It's actually the flag from Watchmen. In HBO's Watchmen, Vietnam became the 51st US state after a decisive superhuman US victory there.
Oh, nice.
And the US flag has a circle instead of a square with 51 stars.
There's a 51 star flag here that has a Pac-Man eating two bubbles. There's also a 50-star flag that has a Star of David out of stars.
Here's my idea. Because everybody knows D.C. is not going to be a real state. It's going to be weirdly tiny. I think it does have more people than Wyoming, but area-wise, it's kind of embarrassing. Does it have more people than Wyoming? It does,
It does, but I think less area than Delaware.
Right, much less than any other U.S. state. So I think what you should have is the current flag with an asterisk, a white asterisk on the field.
Oh, little asterisks.
Oh, yeah. People noticed, by the way, that you say asterisk.
Asterisk.
Instead of asterisk.
But, asterisk?
I mean, if you want to say it wrong, I guess it's your asterisk.
Asterisk?
Asphodel?
Anyway, futurelings, I have no idea what we were talking about.
Yeah, what part of the outro were you
at? Well, if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may have been our final word. But if providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.